Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Seriously, the New Statesman podcast that takes pop culture seriously.
I'm Caroline Crampton.
And I'm Anna Leskovich. This week we're talking about the Oscar-winning film The Shape of Water and the BBC documentary Kunk on Britain.
We've also watched the Australian comedy Please Like Me for the first time, so we'll be talking about how that went later in the show.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Seriously. I'm feeling a little worse for wear today, Caroline. Last night I went to the Empire Magazine Awards, you know.
Fancy.
Empire Film Magazine fame. It's the last film awards in the awards circuit. It's obviously not as glamorous and as prestigious as the Oscars or the Golden Globes, etc., but it's voted for by the readers of Empire.
Okay.
So it's quite a big kind of like blockbustery awards.
That's good.
So yeah, I quite like it. So the Last Jedi was the like biggest winner, and it picked up awards for like best director and best film and best actress, which obviously it's not going to at those more kind of like prestigious-y, arty-farty awards. But yeah, it was kind of a weird night. We were like sat next to Hugh Jackman, like
what?
A table away from Hugh Jackman. Daisy Ridley was there. Mark Hamill was there. Like quite a lot of the Last Jedi people were there. Steven Spielberg was there accepting some sort of Lifetime Achievement Award. And like really classic people were there, like Stephen Merchant and Martin Freeman and like, you know, some real like Brits, Idris Elba. So that was quite fun, if a slightly weird Sunday night, and now I feel a little tired.
That sounds great. I had really no idea that that existed, and I'm sort of glad it does, because I don't know, coming off awards season and like now I've just been like looking at what films are coming up that I can enjoy, even like more struck than ever about how weirdly niche the films that get awarded at the Oscars and the BAFTAs are.
Totally. But it's interesting because I sometimes think you can be like, oh, well, if it's going to be voted for by the public, then it's literally just going to be Star Wars and nothing else winning. But Logan was really popular, which I think is kind of like a superhero film that, you know, was actually good and that superhero fans really, really absolutely adore. So I like that that did well. And then also God's Own Country did really well.
I was going to ask about that because that I was really angry that that didn't do better at the BAFTAs, because I felt like
sad.
That, you know, if the BAFTAs was made to like lift up any British filmmaking, it's exactly that kind.
Yeah.
So I was really annoyed that it like didn't win all the awards, to be honest.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad that, you know, actual people liked it.
No, yeah, Josh O'Connor picked up Best Male Newcomer, I think, was the award. So Hugh Jackman won Best Actor, but Josh O'Connor won Best Male Newcomer, and then it won Best British Film. Which, yeah, I don't know, I was kind of surprised, even though, you know, as you say, it's kind of like disappointing that it didn't do better in some other awards. I was surprised to see it do well at this one, because I didn't know how many people actually got out and saw God's Own Country, so I wasn't expecting it necessarily to do that well in a voted for system, because obviously you sort of think, well, the stuff that did the best at the box office is the stuff most people have seen, so it's the stuff that will get the most votes. But clearly it doesn't always work like that.
And also maybe the readers of Empire magazine are more likely to seek out films that they think sound interesting rather than just like turning up at their local Odeon and seeing what's on. I don't know.
Yeah, totally. So that was interesting. And, you know, it was fun to sort of pretend that you were somewhere glamorous for an evening. I enjoyed that. We got our goodie bag, you know, was full of, it had like some DVDs and stuff like that in it. Awesome. So that was fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
What a weekend.
Yeah, quite a different one to the weekend I had. I'm in the last couple of months before the first draft of my book has to be submitted. So,
oh, Caroline.
I literally don't leave my house now unless it's like for work that I can't turn down or because my dog needs a walk.
Morris needs air.
We literally don't go outside. It's really sad.
It won't be long now. It'll go so quickly.
Well, that's what's terrifying me is the time.
That's the fear.
Is going really quickly. The writing is maybe not going so quickly.
It will be done. I have total faith.
Well, yeah, I believe in your faith in me, if that makes sense.
To seg. Mm-hmm. Did you get out to go to the cinema this week?
I did. And I had a very interesting experience owing to my like near hermit like existence now. I was not remotely aware that it was St. Patrick's Day this weekend.
Oh, you silly idiot.
So we went to see The Shape of Water on Saturday night, quite late, like a 9:30 screening. And so I was getting pretty much the last train from Liverpool back to the Wirral on Saturday night, just after midnight. Wouldn't advise it. Definitely wouldn't advise it unless you were at least 8 pints in and wearing something green, because the train was absolutely rammed with people having the time of their life. And there was me like in the corner wearing all of my jumpers and coat being like, oh, I had some thoughts about the fish man in the film.
That's so funny. I went to the pub on Saturday night in Soho and I didn't see like a single person in green.
I think it might be a Irish diaspora thing. In Liverpool particularly, because there are a lot of Irish people here and a lot of people who like, you know, used to be Irish at some point in their families. And yeah, it's a really big thing.
I say this as part of the Irish diaspora, so yeah. I hope no one thinks that this is rude of me, but I'm from Cheltenham in Gloucestershire, which has a massive Irish diaspora community. That's what all my grandparents are part of that live in Cheltenham. And we also have, during St. Patrick's Day weekend, Cheltenham races.
Oh, wow.
Which is also extremely popular with people coming over from Ireland to like put money on the horses and so on. So St. Patrick's weekend in Cheltenham, I can't even imagine what it was like this year. And I'm really glad I wasn't there, because Cheltenham becomes like a totally different place during the races. Like nice little cafes become strip clubs. Like it's full of people. You can't like get anywhere in the car because the traffic's so bad. Everyone's wasted all the time. It's just absolutely, because Cheltenham's a pretty like quiet, you know, not that out there town. So it's slightly disorienting to see that transformation occur.
Yeah, I had the same experience the first time I accidentally went to Chester on a race day, because there's a big race course there. And you know, Chester's a very like posh, if I say it's like the only place where there's a Waitrose within like a 50 mile radius of where I live, that probably tells you what it's like. And then I happened to get off the train right at the moment at like when most people were arriving to go to the races. And I was like, why am I in a crowd of thousands of people all wearing like ridiculous dresses and 3-piece suits and
strange. It's a nightmare.
I was like, what has happened to me? I'm like, I'm on another planet. It was really strange.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. Though interesting use of Waitrose as a kind of social indicator. I was doing this the other day because there are 5 like massive Waitrose John Lewis food and home stores in the UK, like that are fully enormous, and one of them is in Cheltenham. So I always use that as a like measure of our middle class credentials.
It is a big deal around here as well. People in Liverpool feel quite annoyed that there isn't a Waitrose in Liverpool. There's a John Lewis, but no Waitrose.
Yeah.
You have to go either like to Southport or Chester, like 2 posh places to find
one. I literally played a game with my housemates the other day that was like, guess where all the biggest Waitroses in the UK are in ascending order. It really does tell you a lot about the country. But anyway, moving on from Waitroses.
Yeah, so The Shape of Water, I saw it just this weekend. You saw it a few weeks back, I think.
Yeah, so it was an Oscar nominated and became an Oscar winning movie. It won Best Picture at the Oscars this year, which is obviously the biggest deal there is. So although we didn't talk about it when it was first released in the UK, we thought we should probably have a little chat about it now since it's won Best Picture.
Yes. So just to give you a little bit of background in case you haven't followed it, it was directed by Guillermo del Toro. It's set in Baltimore in 1962 and stars Sally Hawkins as Eliza, who is a cleaner at a secret government laboratory who communicates only through sign language. During her workday, she forms a friendship with a mysterious amphibian creature who's being held and tortured at the lab. Together with her friends Zelda, who's played by Octavia Spencer, and Giles, who's Richard Jenkins, she hatches a plan to help the creature escape captivity. And yeah, as you say, it had the most nominations, I think, of anything at the Oscars this year, and it won like four pretty major categories in the end. Just a brief side note, one of the awards that it won was for Best Original Score, which is the only Oscar that I am still angry about. Like, the other ones I can take or leave, but...
Phantom Thread was robbed.
Johnny Greenwood for Phantom Thread was robbed. Like, the music in The Shape of Water is fine. Like, it is...
It's a bit comedy. It's a bit twee, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a bit like, tweet, 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 twee.
It is, and it works with the film, so it's... The composer did a good job in that regard, but like, I'd forgotten it as soon as I'd left the cinema. Whereas the Phantom Thread music, I'm still listening to it every single day.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah. And I think one of the reasons maybe it took home so many things is because it ticks both those Oscar boxes of like nostalgic film about like outsiders and about Hollywood and about, you know, nostalgia for cinema. And it also ticks some of the other boxes of like outstanding visual effects and costumes, and like it's got so much going on that could win in a lot of categories, I think. So maybe that's why it picked up so many nominations. But it's obviously been like a real favorite with the Academy, which I don't know, kind of surprised me, because I thought they'd either go for like a risk or something really traditional like Three Billboards, and this is kind of neither risky nor traditional. It's kind of like 50% risk, and
yeah,
that's what they ended up going with.
That's true, actually, and it is a real mixture of a film. So I have to say, slightly not to my credit, I had kind of made up my mind about this film without seeing it, like based on like previews and the few reviews I'd seen, and then the fact that it was just cleaning up at award ceremonies. I was like, oh, this looks like schmaltzy rubbish, like I just have no interest in this. And also I therefore really enjoyed all of the Grinding Nemo jokes, etc. on Twitter.
Yeah. And because the central relationship in this film is between Sally Hawkins and the fishman.
Yes.
And it is a romantic at points
relationship. And explicitly sexual relationship. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was like, lol, Grinding Nemo, clearly this film has won when Get Out should. I have no interest in it. Mm. And then I went to see it this weekend and absolutely loved it.
Oh, great. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
And I feel really guilty about doing the thing that I'm always telling other people off for, which is like allowing the hype and the internet jokes about something to get in the way of how you actually appreciate it.
Tell us what you liked about it.
I really liked how sincere it was, even though it's, as you say, it is a film about a woman falling in love with like a human-sized fish man. It at no point does any like nodding or winking to the camera to be like, lol, isn't this absurd?
That's true.
You're invited to absolutely buy into the fact that they are genuine and it is genuine. And I really like that. And I realised that's not something you get to see that much anymore in fantasy.
Totally.
It's quite a simple story as well. The complexities come in like the imagery and the sort of genres it's alluding to rather than the actual story itself. Like the goodies are goodies, the baddies are baddies. And the heroes like try and do good things for others and the baddies don't. And so, yeah, I was really caught up in it. And as you said at the beginning, like it does have this referential Hollywood thing going on in common with stuff like that has also been very praised at the Oscars, stuff like La La Land and The Artist also had that same kind of Hollywood nuance reference thing. And in this, Eliza and Giles actually live in apartments like above an old cinema, and both the like noise of the films that play 24/7 underneath them like trickle up, also what they're doing like bleeds down, and it, you get this sense, and there isn't a scene that's explicitly where Eliza has like a cinematic daydream, You know, yeah, so totally. The reality does like blur at the edges a bit, and you're like, oh, yeah, we are watching a film. There, we're in a film, you know.
Those were some of my favourite bits, actually. My favourite scene in it is the scene where he's sat at the kitchen or dining room table with her. She's sat at one end and he's at the other. And he's just like gulping down these eggs that she's boiled for him because he likes boiled eggs. Mm. They're always kind of framed as sexual, these eggs, from the beginning, just because we kind of like see that she masturbates in the time it takes for her to cook her eggs in the morning and stuff. But as he's just like chowing down on these eggs, like really, really like into the eggs, only sort of thinking about the eggs, she's singing this like song to him about how much she loves him and how he'll never know. And she can't speak, so it's obviously a fantastical segment, and it's like an imagined segment, and like you say, it kind of bleeds into the fantasy of a movie. But it's, I think it just says something so nice and almost obscene about like attention and how like she's got so much attention fixed on this guy, and he's just like this fish man, and he's just like chowing down on the eggs. There was something about the whole dynamic of that scene that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I really like that as well. And the little bit of the song and dance number that they do is it looks exactly like an Astaire Rogers RKO musical from like the 30s or 40s. It's all black and white and like really stark art deco set, and even what she's wearing. But the only difference is that she's not dancing with Fred Astaire, she's dancing with a fish man. And it's a real measure of how like beautifully sincere the film is, that when that happens about three quarters of the way through, I didn't even think about laughing.
I think you're right. I hadn't really appreciated that. The level of sincerity that it has is really, really nice. I think this film for me is like, I really enjoyed it and I liked it a lot, but I agree with what you say about like the villains are very much villains, the goodies are goodies. Like, there's something a little straightforward about it sometimes, which seems like a weird thing to say about a film that's about a woman and a fish. But in a way that, like, so for me, my favourite films of the year, and it's unfair to go and see a film and be like, is it up there with my favourite films of the year? Because that's, as we, you know, that's what we're talking about with buying into hype and criticising a film because of the hype surrounding it, which isn't really fair. But for me, it can't live up to films that I found so like nuanced and complicated and full of depth, like Get Out, Lady Bird, Call Me By Your Name, Phantom Thread. Those films are films that I feel like any 5-minute section of it, you could like study for hours, and there'd be so much to say about them. Even if they're like, Get Out and Lady Bird are still quite broad comedies, they're still very mainstream, they're still very accessible. There's just something, there's just so much going on there at the same time, which I didn't feel that with The Shape of Water. And maybe I'm being unfair, maybe that is going on there, but for me it was still pretty broad. It had like moments of quite high comedy, it was very accessible, very mainstream, very like Edward Scissorhands-y, but didn't quite have the same level of stuff going on in the background all the time.
Yeah,
I found other films
too. I think that's true. It's very self-contained. Like, it, although it is a Cold War film in the sense that the reason the Fishman is being kept in captivity by the Americans is to stop the Russians studying him and getting an advantage in the space race. So
bloody Russians!
It does have that kind of framing device to it, but that all feels very remote. Like, it's not a film that's trying to tell you anything about how we live now. You know, it is just a story, and a story about then and those characters, which is something I actually quite like sometimes, is like a bit of light relief from the what you can get these days, which is a lot of like, and maybe they're just like us type stuff. So yeah, I did like that sort of self-containedness, but I think it does slightly like limit what it can do. I felt the only aspect where they really got into anything really meaty, for want of a better word, is in discussions of masculinity, because I think there's a very strong thread in it about the fact that this fish man is like more of a quote honorable man than any of the other men in the film, even though he's a fish. You know, he exhibits kindness and empathy and loyalty when the apparently all-American perfect soldier people who are keeping him captive are actually shown to be rotten and dishonorable and horrible. So I thought there were some interesting things going on there. And also with her neighbor Giles, who is a not out gay man, in the early 60s, and the sort of struggles he's having with, like, oh, my hair's falling out, and then the fish man restores his hair and all that kind of thing. So I thought there were some interesting things going on there. But yeah, apart from that, I wasn't feeling like I really got drawn into a nuanced debate about anything.
Totally. I agree. I wanted to shout out to Michael Stuhlbarg, who plays Dr. Robert Hofstetler, or Dimitri, in this film. He's kind of like a double agent who's converted to the cause of saving the fish. He also is the dad in Call Me By Your Name, and also is Abe Rosenthal in The Post. What a year.
I know, he's had a stunning year.
Really, just everywhere. So I thought his performance was great. And yeah, and I had fun. I definitely enjoyed the movie. And Sally Hawkins, I thought, was great as well.
She was fantastic. So yeah, all in all, I found it a very enjoyable trip to the cinema. It hasn't really changed my opinions about the outcome of awards season. But I also feel like I was unjustly down on it before seeing it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So the next thing we're going to talk about is Kunk on Britain. Some of you may know Philomena Kunk. She's a character from Charlie Brooker's Wipe programs, Weekly Wipe, Screen Wipe, 2015 Wipe, etc. She's a kind of dim-witted, ill-informed talking head played by the actress and comedian Diane Morgan. We've talked about her before on Seriously. She was in BBC's Motherland, which was a comedy that we enjoyed. And she's been playing this character for a long time. Previous shows she's done on her own include Kunk on Shakespeare and Kunk on Christmas. And now she's doing Kunk on Britain, which is basically a fake documentary, a mockumentary in the style of all those TV shows that are just everywhere on British TV that include kind of like a recognisable British face being like, hi, I'm here at the White Cliffs of Dover and I'm going to talk about what Britain is and what Britain means. So the premise is that it's a documentary covering the entire history of Britain from the Big Bang to Brexit over 5 30-minute long episodes, and it comes to BBC Two on Tuesday the 3rd of April, so it's coming to screens near you soon. We've watched it already, and it's really funny.
It's really funny. I mean, I've long found Philomena Kunk to be one of the best things about the various Wipe programmes. I sometimes, like, as much as I do like Charlie Brooker's monologues in them, I do sometimes found him a bit too depressing. Like, sometimes he's a bit too on the nose with his everything is awful. Whereas the beauty of the Philomena Kunk character is that she sometimes seems cynical. Like, her tone can come off as cynical, but actually she's got quite a sort of innocent view of the world. It's quite an individualistic view of the world as well. Like, she generally boils down big points into like, but will my TV still work? That kind of like question about things. And I find it really charming. I also thought, I don't know what you thought about this, but I really loved all the effort that had gone into this in parodying the documentary format.
Yeah, that's the best thing about it, I think, is that her and the program makers really get what all the tropes are of these programs. And even in the press release, as Philomena Kunk, Diane Morgan even said, like, this program will involve me traveling the length and width of the country, standing in front of old buildings, talking into the camera. And you're like, yeah, that's... And even like the phrasing of length and width just draws attention to the fact that every single show says, I'll be traveling the length and breadth of Britain to, you know...
And all of the aerial shots of, as you say, the White Cliffs of Dover and castles and stuff like that is all perfect.
Yeah, she's got the walk and talk down as well. The way she like the way they like walked slowly while talking to the camera about how Catherine of Aragon maybe was more than she seemed. You're like, okay, we get it. But I think when you describe it like this, it can sound quite like five 30-minute episodes parodying popular documentary styles. Isn't that going to get really boring and really drawn out? And I think it would if it wasn't for, as you say, her sort of idiosyncratic way of looking at the world and the kind of one-liners and little descriptions that Philomena Kunk brings out are so weird that they surprise you every time. It's not like Charlie Brooker, I feel like, although he's amazing at what he does, and I don't mean to put him down at all. He's kind of got like a shtick and he brings out the same shtick a lot of times and it's always proving a point. Whereas because her way of speaking is so weird, even if she repeats it lots of times, it's surprising every time because, I mean, how often would anyone describe sword fighting as, quote, extreme whittling?
Yes.
Like when she brings out things like that, you're like, wait, what did you just say? This is so weird that I can't help but be laughing because it's just too bizarre. So I think that's why she can carry it for longer than the joke really has any right to go on for.
Also, it's really helped by she does the classic documentary thing of interviewing other talking heads, all of whom are real academics in this program, who are, as far as I can tell, not scripted.
They don't seem scripted at all.
No, I think they are just like stuck in a chair opposite Diane Morgan. She obviously has some ideas about what she's going to say, and then she just asks them stupid questions to see what they would say. And there's a very interesting variety of responses. Like Tom Holland, who you might be aware of his work as a telly don, mostly about sort of classical subjects, he got quite angry with her. Like, because I can't remember what the subject of their interview was.
Was it the King George one?
Yes, that was it. She kept being like, so did King George actually kill the dragon or did he just like do it to make it look good? And he was like, dragons are not real. There was no dragon. And she's like, but when you say the dragon did this, she's like, there's no dragon, which was very funny.
I also enjoyed Robert Peston. She asks him, what's the most political thing that's ever happened? And he really goes along with it. He's really like, ooh, great question. The most political thing that's ever happened in Britain. That's a really tough one. Then she's like, second most political. So it's really silly and funny.
Those are really funny. And I think it's the woman from the National Archive who I thought had the best way of dealing with Philomena Kunk, which was to just take her absolutely at face value. So her little bit was showing the original Doomsday Book to Philomena Kunk, and Philomena Kunk is trying all of this, like, so when all these things are written down in there, is it, I sort of thought it was like cursed and people's souls were still inside it. And the archivist like, no, I've never heard that. I don't think that's true. Like she's not trying
she's like,
to,
we don't need to worry about that actually. She's like, oh, are you sure? She's like, yeah, you don't need to worry about that. Yeah. It's very sweet. I really just love those weird turns of phrases from her. And sometimes the jokes I find are like quite kind of like satirical and like a little bit more clever, a little bit more high level. So there'll be like, there's one where she's like, this was a terrible time to be gluten intolerant, but fortunately nobody was yet middle class, so everyone just got on with it. And that's like, you know, the kind of joke you can imagine a sort of Telegraph newspaper columnist making. And then at other moments she's just being an absolute idiot and it's really silly. Like at one point there's like a supercut of 12th century churches And she's like, amazingly, these were all built by one man, Norman Architecture.
That was my favourite
really
joke.
That really made me laugh. I was like, that's so stupid. They have absolutely no right to put a joke that stupid in this TV show. And yeah, I am laughing.
Yeah, I loved it. So yeah, I highly recommend Concon Britain. It really made me smile.
Yeah. Caroline just made a heinous admission off air. Caroline, just repeat what you just said to me. That is absolutely outrageous.
Okay, so I was just admitting to Anna that Shakespeare and Hathaway, which we did podcast before?
A couple of weeks ago.
All time is incomprehensible to me at the moment.
Because Caroline is writing a book, yeah, as you may have heard.
And I keep going on about how busy I am and how I never leave the house and I don't have time for anything. Apart from I have somehow inexplicably made time to watch all 10 50-minute episodes of Shakespeare and Hathaway.
Oh my God, there are 10 of them.
There are 10 of them.
I didn't know there were 10.
Yep. And I unashamedly love it. I think it's fantastic, and I really hope
they
make more of it.
Do you have no shame?
No, I don't.
How does it get better as it goes along, or just it gets the same?
The same. It's the same. I'd say the one thing that I did really like that does sort of get better, or there is more of it, not sure which, is the character of Sebastian, who's like their little assistant,
who's a camp assistant
who wants to be an actor but can't get a job and so has to work for them. He has like a bigger role the more it goes on. He does more wearing crazy costumes and like using his camp superpowers for good, which I really liked. But just to make like a tiny serious point about this, I actually think that the people who made it are secretly trying to like improve diversity on daytime television.
Really?
Yeah, because there are multiple episodes where the like innocent protagonists are like middle class black people.
Yeah.
Like they're not the ones getting murdered. They're just the like nice people who run a wellness retreat who a bad thing has happened to, you know what I mean? Yeah. And then there's another episode where one of the things they find, or like Sebastian finds out during the course of the episode, that one of their suspects is really into cross-dressing and goes to all these like events for men who like to dress in women's clothes and stuff. But it's not at all in a like, oh my God, how disgusting, or like how ridiculous way. Sebastian like goes undercover, dresses up and goes to one of these nights and has a really like genuine and sincere conversation with the guy where he's like, yeah, my wife really didn't understand. She left me. It's been really difficult. This is the only place I felt accepted, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, this is so nice and not at all what I was expecting from daytime television.
Well, all I can say is I suppose true representation means seeing yourself in bad TV as well as good TV.
Yeah, so anyway, this was not what we were meant to be talking about in this segment. The point was, we have finally watched Please Like Me, which
after 3 years of being told to watch Please Like Me.
I think this might be the most recommended programme by Seriously listeners.
Yeah, I think I'm almost certain you're right. So it's an Australian comedy.
It's created by and stars the comedian Josh Thomas. He plays the main character, also called Josh.
Classic.
And yeah, and the series really just follows his love life, his friendships, and his family. The first series aired in 2013, and there have been four, and he's now said, I don't think they're going to make any more, so the fourth series is the last one.
It's all on Amazon Prime if people have a Prime membership. That's how I watched it. So it's quite nice to be like, all four seasons available in their entirety as part of my existing subscription. Phew. Mm-hmm. Like that's,
yes.
I love it when I see that these days.
So yeah, the pilot episode starts with Josh being broken up with by his very long-term girlfriend and her. They have this really funny scene that's framed through, he's just ordered a $19 ice cream sundae and she's sitting opposite him in the sundae, and then she's like, I think we should break up, and she's like, yeah, we've really drifted apart, also you're gay. And Josh is very,
which I feel like is a trope. I feel
it
like you could
trope,
collate
yeah.
all these scenes where it like begins with the girl being like, oh, you're gay, so I'm gonna break up with you. Mm. And then being like, what, I'm not gay, and her being like, yeah, you're gay, which I don't think is a thing that people can tell other people, even though in TV they're always right. But yeah
so anyway, sexuality is something that Josh is working on, let's say.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And even in the first episode, he ends up like making out with a guy, and
he meets a fit dude.
He meets a really fit
dude. Beautiful dude.
And ends up making out with him, and then some bad stuff happens. I feel like the general like trope of this comedy is Josh getting in his own way and events also getting in Josh's way. So every time something seems like something is happening for Josh that you're like, yeah, good for you, man. Like that's what you deserve. Either he does something to get in his own way, or spoiler alert for the first episode of something that aired 5 years ago, you know, he gets a series of phone calls from family members being like, oh, your mum's in hospital. She's like tried to take an overdose. You've got to come now. So it's very much always like action interrupted.
I really like the character of Josh. He's obviously given loads of depth and he's like a really interesting character. I think the mannerisms and the way he speaks is quite unusual. And I think that's probably just coming straight from the comedian Josh rather than the character Josh at its heart. And I really like that. And at first I was like, hang on, this guy is kind of like odd. And his way of speaking to like his family members is odd, but it's really quite endearing.
It's really charming, I thought, yeah.
Yeah, really charming. So I felt compelled to keep watching for that. So far, I find the rest of the characters, and it is very early on, I've only seen the first two episodes, and I'm sure they'll develop as it goes along because you kind of have to just focus on your lead character from the off. The rest of the characters I find a little bit like, you know, pawns in the chess game that is Josh's life. They're kind of like props. They're not given loads of depth just yet, but it almost doesn't really matter because the stuff that they're talking about, you know, like you said, his mum tries to take her own life, so there's a whole thread of kind of like mental illness and suicidal thoughts being discussed. And there's also Josh discovering his sexuality, or at least experimenting with it. And, you know, there's quite all of those issues are dealt with so sensitively and with such like nice warmth and humor that it almost doesn't matter if some things are kind of a little bit thinner on the ground. So I finished watching the first episode and I thought that was all I was going to have time for, but I just like squished in the next one because I was like, oh, I actually do want to carry on watching this. So it is really, really nice.
It is really nice. And I'm really, given that there are, I think, 32 episodes in total, I'm really interested to see where it goes because I think sometimes... Well, I'm not even sure it would be fair to describe this as a sitcom, but sometimes comedy shows that really heavily revolve around one character, and particularly like one performance, can get a bit repetitive in one note.
Totally.
As like the same things just happen to that character again. But judging by the like wave of recommendations from Seriously listeners, and also the general plaudits that this show won, like it won a lot of awards for writing and stuff, I don't think that's going to happen in this. I think there's going to be like actual development.
That would be great. Yeah, I'm excited to see how it moves forward because, you know, it's very difficult. We often have to do this on Seriously, especially with recommends, where we don't have time to watch an entire series for each, you know, we can't watch three TV series for every week's episode, but it's hard to judge something on just one or two, especially when it's been running for four seasons like Please Like Me has. But I was definitely really intrigued and I hope that I have time to carry on with it because it's a sweet little series.
It's really sweet. It's really charming. And it pulled off something really difficult for me, which is that even though it is tackling some really heavy stuff, I finished it smiling.
Yeah, without feeling like it's been treated as a joke, any of it?
No, not at all. So I definitely would put it in the same category as something like Fleabag, where somehow you find terrible things funny whilst also having like huge empathy with the protagonists. So we've belatedly done your recommendation, everyone, and we liked it. I hope you're happy.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
If you enjoyed the show, why not subscribe to make sure you never miss another episode?
We're available in all the usual places you get podcasts, including on Apple Podcasts, where you could leave us a rating and a review if you fancy. It makes us happy and it also helps other people find the show.
If you'd like to come and see us in person, check out the events page of our website, seriouslypod.com/events. Details of our next pop culture quiz and anything else we're doing will appear there.
We're available many other places on the internet, including on Twitter, Facebook and Tumblr. We're SeriouslyPod on all of them. Follow us to keep up with what we're up to or to chat to other listeners about things you've enjoyed on the show.
We love getting your recommendations for things we should feature on the show or hearing your thoughts on what we've already discussed. Get in touch on social media or email us on seriouslypod@gmail.com.
And if you feel strongly that more pop culture needs to be taken seriously, spread the word and tell your friends and family about the podcast.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.